Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day in the pickle bar. Led by the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors Studio West today. We're in Dallas. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Like yesterday, we'll forego the play-by-play call of the day. That will return on Monday. We'll have that as our regular feature. But we have so much going on here. We're going to get right back to James Franklin and his press conference. And the significance, not only of the Cotton Bowl, but the historic significance of the Cotton Bowl. 1948, Wally Triplett and Denny Hogart were both a part of this game. The first time African Americans ever participated in the Cotton Bowl. Penn State stood together as a team, and that's a very important story.
Yeah, you know, I think the history, I think, is significant. And I think you could, you know, make the argument it's not just those two guys, it's how the whole team and how the whole community kind of rallied behind those guys. You know, I know there's a lot of different discussions and theories and thoughts on where the we are, you know, came from. But, you know, that's the one I think that, that most of us identify with, you know. So, you know, for me and for the team, you know, it's interesting because, you know, these guys, sometimes we talk to them, you know, and we talk about things that we think they know and the history that we think they know, and they have no clue. You know, I mean, they think like the 90s were a long time ago, you know, which is scary to me on a whole nother level. But that's where I think it's important that we take some time kind of talking about these things and having some of the discussions, especially with some of the discussions that we had kind of throughout the year as well, you know. So, you know, maybe connecting some of those storylines and talking about it. Again, a lot of the players, when Wally came and spoke to the team, Mr. Triplett came and spoke to the team, you know, a lot of those guys aren't here anymore. So, you know, we're going to spend some time kind of talking about the history, the significance. I think we can make some great connections with some of the conversations that we had this year. You know, and then obviously for me, you know, that's something that I don't spend a whole lot of time talking about, but I think the people that know me closely, and people within our program, they understand how important that is to me. You know, when, you know, in 2019, 2020, when you can say you're the first, you know, there's not a whole lot of opportunities to say that anymore. So hopefully, you know, we get to the point where those things are not conversations, you know, anymore. But I do think it's going to be important for us to take some time and kind of talk about that and the significance of that. And I know the Cotton Bowl is aware too.
James left rear at the end of the dinner banquet for the team. Nick Urie was offered a scholarship. The reaction was kind of special from the family and from the program. It must be a perk of the job to offer something like that at the end of the year. How did you reach the conclusion that his efforts matched the scholarship?
Yeah, so he earned it. You know, we didn't offer him or give him anything. We, you know, he earned that. A lot of times you kind of get in those situations, and there's a lot of moving parts from an NCAA perspective and what you're allowed to do, you know, from a scholarships numbers perspective in terms of managing your roster. So there's sometimes you'd like to do some things, but it just doesn't work at that time. But Urie's been kind of on that path really since he got here, you know, in terms of just how he's gone about his business, the type of teammate he's been. But then there also needs to be the right time, you know. So, you know, for us, once we asked enough questions to compliance and, you know, and kind of went through some things as a staff, you know, it made sense. And this was the time to do it. So, you know, what was cool was, you know, when we were sitting there and the bank was getting started, I knew we were going to do this, and a few people on our staff knew we were going to do this. But then, you know, Urie shows up and his mom is with him, his dad's with him, his grandmom is with him. So I'm like, you know, this is perfect. So, you know, just a kid that's done everything the right way. And we got a bunch of guys in our program that I could make that argument, and it doesn't always end the storybook ending. It doesn't always play out that way, but when it can, you'd like it to. I do think it reinforces for our team, you know, and for our community that if you work hard and you put others first, that you will be rewarded for that. Maybe not always in the time that you think you should be rewarded for it, but it's noticed. Sometimes the reward is not maybe a scholarship in your hand, but it's the respect that you earn from the teammates and how you're remembered. Kind of an interesting story that goes along with that is I'm sitting with Bowers, which is probably more impactful than the scholarship, to be honest with you. But I'm sitting with Bowers and his family. We do like a little bit of reception for the seniors beforehand with the parents and those guys and the coaches taking pictures and all that kind of stuff before they come in. And Bowers' sister is there. And we got a bunch of players now where their younger sisters now or younger brothers have come to Penn State too. So I'm sitting there talking about it. I'm talking about the family. And the mom brings up, about whether she has a boyfriend or not. And as a dad having two daughters, it's not a conversation that I enjoy having a whole lot. And mom said, yeah, Nick, is there anybody on the team that you'd be comfortable with, you know, dating your sister? And he's like, no, except for maybe Yuri, you know. And I think that kind of speaks to the type of respect that guy has earned. You know, the scholarship says one thing, you know, that says another, you know. So he's just a neat kid, you know. He's a neat kid. I remember all the way back, you know, after signing Connor McGovern and the connection with that family and the school and the community, you know. So, you know, just as important as it is going out and signing that, you know, high profile recruit that everybody's excited about and thinks that they're going to change the program, these guys are just as important. The guys that are going to be in the locker room, the guys that are culture drivers, the guys that maybe aren't showing up in the stat sheet or in the newspaper, but are critical for you to have the type of program that we want to have. And, you know, Yuri's done it the right way from the time he stepped on campus. So I could not be more proud of him and what he represents.
James, I just wanted to go back to offensive coordinator for a moment.
Shocker.
I was wondering if you could shed any light on the timeline. And by that, I mean, you know, is this an announcement that could come before the bowl game, or is this something you anticipate might not come until after the coaches' convention?
Yeah, I don't know. I know you got to ask, but I've told you guys, you know, what I can tell you. When I have the decision made, you guys will know. Giving any more detail about it not only isn't appropriate, but also can impact the search. I'm not going and hiring some guy, you know, that's sitting down at Champs, you know, making all the calls after the play was run. You know, most of the guys we're talking to, Johnny Hindsight right here, right? But most of the people we're talking to, you know, obviously are sitting, you know, coordinators, you know, whether that is in the NFL or whether that is in college. And you got a few that aren't, that are part of the conversation as well. But the reason that we don't talk a whole lot about it is because it's not in Penn State's best interest. When information starts to leak out, when people are trying to track planes, trains, and automobiles of where we're going, all those types of things, I get the interest and I get the curiosity, but it really doesn't help. It hurts, because if names, you know, get out before they should, it's going to make it more challenging for us to hire the right person for Penn State.
Hey, James.
How you doing?
Maybe you can bring Keegan back in for a body double to get on a different plane.
Be good.
Yeah. Late in the season, you had several teams coming off byes that you faced that had a different way of attacking your pass rush. Given that you're going into a game with a long layoff and your team is facing a team that has a quality offense and passing game, like you mentioned. Do you expect to see something similar in those situations where it's the longer layoff? There might be something you hadn't seen yet on film. And how do you think you handle those curveballs throughout the season?
Yeah, there's going to be a plan. There's no doubt about it. There always is. You know, I think that the most important thing that we can have is a bunch of fresh defensive linemen on the field, and that's where how we handle these bowl practices are important, that they get enough work, that we're sharp, but also, you know, that we're rested and fresh and fast, and that's where the sports science all plays into it as well. You know, I think, you know, there's a plan always for defensive ends. It's hard to have a plan, you know, with the inside guys. So, you know, for us, the development of really all four guys on the field, you can't take them all away. So if they are going to have a plan for Etor, or they are going to have a plan for Shaka, whatever that plan is and who they're double teaming, whether they're sliding, whether they're chipping, whether they're using a tight end, whether they're using the back, whether they're moving the pocket or whatever it may be, that plan that puts an emphasis on taking someone away creates opportunities for others. And that's where that needs to happen. If the plan is specifically to impact Etor's, impact in the game, then that needs to create opportunities for others. So, that's kind of how we look at it. No different than a great running back is great for the passing game. Having Saquon Barkley in the backfield, having Miles in the backfield, having the running backs that we have in the backfield right now create really good opportunities for our passing game, and vice versa. So they're kind of all complementary pieces. And the reality is, although we would love to take everything that they do away offensively, when you try to take one thing away, you're creating opportunities in other places. And that's with their offense, that's with their defense, that's with our offense, that's with our defense and special teams as well. And that's the chess match. You know, that's the chess match. I think for the most part, to your question, I think for the most part, I think we did a pretty good job of that all year long. Obviously, there's times where you look back and you say, you know, we could be better in this area and we need to be better in this area. There's no doubt about it. But again, you know, the narrative and the story and looking back from a positive from a perspective on hindsight, there's definitely things that we got to get better at. But there's also the other end of the spectrum where you look, we've had a fantastic season. There's probably 95% of the universities and colleges and football programs in the country that would love to be playing in a New Year's Six Bowl game right now and be in a position to get their 11th win. So overall, good. But we understand, you know, there's very high standards and expectations around here.
Hey, James.
Hey,
when you were talking about earlier about the freshman and the freshman wall and that kind of thing, for a lot of these guys, it's a year where they're going through stuff they haven't gone through before. And with Noah Cain, how do you think he's responded really since that Michigan State game, and how important has this layoff been since the Rutgers game to kind of get him back to where you want him to be?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times these guys are facing adversity for the first time, you know, athletic adversity, I guess is what I should say. And a lot of these guys obviously all have different stories personally, but I'm talking about athletic adversity. So for him, you know, he's such a competitor. Football is very important to him. You know, we want to make sure, I think that's one of the things that's probably not discussed enough, is you better recruit guys that love football. You can't like football at this level. You got to love it to do what you have to do to be successful at the highest level. And there's some guys that I think love the recruiting process and like football, and being able to identify who those guys are is really important. Noah's a guy that loves football. So part of the issue with him is, you know, you guys had asked me each week, and you know, I really wasn't trying to be elusive, you know, with my answers. He wanted to play every single week, even the first week. And if we didn't have the depth that we had, we probably would have. But he just wasn't right. And each week, we're kind of the next week, well, he'll be ready the next week. And it just kind of lingered for him. So the combination of that and the depth that we had at the position, it just didn't make sense. But he looked really good yesterday. He looked normal, where like before you'd catch him limping at times and things like that. So I think he's good to go now. You know, if he's not starting, you guys will rip my butt about that after the game. But you know, the great thing is you see Journey stepped up, and you know, Ricky and Devin, and you know, we're in a good situation there. But I think it was just one of those things. He needed time off of it, and as aggressively as he approached, you know, getting back, it just wasn't enough for him to be 100%. I also think the way he approached it is going to allow him to be 100% in the bowl game now, which I don't know if it would have been if he didn't attack it the way he did.
Time for two more. We'll start with Mike.
Hey, James.
Hey, Mike.
I don't think folks have had a chance to ask this question. There's a report, maybe two, that you met with Florida State officials or representatives. Is that true?
I did not meet with Florida State. Did not meet with Florida State's officials. There's a lot of reports out there, but I did not meet with Florida State's officials.
Hey, James, I'll keep it quick. I got to get back to champs.
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you, Neil.
You had a flood of guys come out immediately after last year's bowl game and make their announcements, many of which were departures. And you had some that were ahead of that this year in terms of announcing that they were staying. I wonder if you could address that, and is there a positive carryover of getting some of those announcements out of the way before the bowl game and rolling into beyond?
Yeah, I think we'll have both. We'll have both. So what we do is, right when the regular season ends, I set up meetings with all of those guys and their parents. And we've put an extensive amount of work in of projections of where we think they are based on conversations with GMs and scouts and all those types of things. So we put all that together for them. Some guys are ready to make the decision, and that meeting kind of either pushes them in one direction or the other. We also have the ability with the NFL to be able to turn five names in to get evaluations from the NFL, actual evaluations from the NFL. We only get to do five, which can also be problematic because there's probably more guys that want it than just five. You know, and there's all different factors into it. You know, typically it's pretty cut and dry. It's first round. You really should, you know, plan on making that decision and moving on. You got the second round, which is pretty much a personal decision, but probably leaning more towards leaving. And then you got the third round or lower that all the data says that you should go back to school. But then obviously there's a lot of family dynamics and things like that that go into it. Pat was interesting. It was very similar to Mike Gesicki's meeting where I met with Pat and went through it all with his family. And his parents were like, you know, we love it. We're enjoying it. We're not ready for him to leave. We love the RV lots. We're having a great time here. All this stuff that we just went through, if this happens for him, awesome. If it doesn't, he's getting a great education. Pat was like, you know, I appreciate it, but, you know, I'm not ready to leave. I can't imagine myself going and living in a city by myself right now. You know, he's kind of enjoying this and feels like he needs another year of development. So the conversations are very different based on a thousand different dynamics. For us, we do not recruit them. You know, I know some programs do that. I don't recruit them. My belief is we give them all the information that them and their family can make educated decisions. We kind of talk about it from both perspectives. The thing I think that's interesting, that a lot of times I think the players, they're uncomfortable having a conversation with you because they think you're just going to tell them to come back. And the reality is you want it to be a win-win. So if they leave early, it's in their best interest and our best interest that they get drafted as high as possible, because that allows us to show our current players and the next recruits that, look, if you come here, you're going to get drafted high. And if they come back to school, it's in our best interest to make sure that whatever they were projected at the year before, that the following year, they're higher.
James Franklin, perfect explanation on the NFL draft. Yetur Gross-Matos has already said he is going in. KJ Hamler will tell everybody about his decision after the game, and maybe we'll find out a couple more after the game as well. Sean Clifford, Micah Parsons, next half hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK.